This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast podcast, the very best bits of today's show from the 5th of April, Tuesday, lovingly curated by our producer, Isa Havilia. What have we got for you today? Well, talking about the rising cost of pretty much everything, to be honest, going to get the thoughts of Tom Harvey as Spinneys, the rising price of food on our supermarket shelves at the moment, with global food inflation becoming a problem. Also talking about the rising price of real estate as well, Ben McGregor of ICD Brookfield, the big swanky office block down in DIFC, says, yep, rents are on the rise because demand for premium office space in Dubai is very strong at the moment. And finally, we hear from Ahmed Mohamed Al Nakbi. He's the CEO of Emirates Development Bank. They're lending money to small to medium-sized enterprises, more than 1,000 of them last year. His thoughts on where the money is going. All that to come. First up, though, here is Serena with your headlines.
Morning, guys.
Good to have you with us. And you have been looking into a story, along with the rest of the team at the Aero News Centre, passports.
Yeah, we've been hearing reports of people struggling to get passports renewed or process applications. That appears to have been having a domino effect, be it visa renewals or not being able to plan for your holidays. So there's been some more reports that some countries are having issues processing these applications due to a backlog from COVID-19. And also lack of resources or support. So people of the UAE, they have been sharing their experiences. KJ shared her story with the Aero News Centre.
I would say this has definitely affected me. I applied to get my passport renewed last year, December, and I haven't still heard back from the embassy on when I would be able to get it back. It's going to be 5 months at the end of April, and part of me feels stuck because I'm unable to set any travel plans in stone, just because I can't predict when I would get back my passport.
I do have other clips for you, but what we're doing is we're actually reaching out to some of the various consulates for the countries that have been mentioned, because of course we need to get their take as well, just to see if they can shed some light as to why this situation is happening, why people are in this predicament, be it again lack of resources or just because of the backlog from the COVID-19 pandemic. So if this sounds familiar, the Aero News team would like to hear from you. Feel free to send a voice note. Tom, you mentioned the number before, 04871 5500, or you can just comment if you're more comfortable with that, because we do have a post on the Aero News Centre Instagram. Some of the comments we've had, one person said, absolutely. I've heard so many countries are facing passport renewal backlogs and it affects immediate work travel. We've had DXB Food 2021 saying, yes, forget summer vacation. My passport is taking 6 months or more. Visa renewal has stopped and fines are being applied. Mia.mia419 said she's relieved that she's not alone. She's been affected as well. And after more than 4 weeks, she is still at stage one of passport renewal. And then I am_Irina.k. I've been trying to get an appointment at the consulate. No slots available. So it is a developing story that we're trying to follow up and chase as well. But again, if you'd like to have your say, 04871 5500.
It's tough. I mean, I've got a bit of skin in the game in this one at the moment, because I think one of the problems is because we haven't travelled much recently. So a lot of people have lost touch with their passports, and by that I mean not lost their passports, but you used to keep up to date with all the, you know, the validities as to when they needed to be renewed, whether it be your visa, whether it be passport. So, and we've done exactly that. A couple of the kids' passports coming to needed to be renewed. We've just done one. Took 11 weeks because it had to be sent back to the UK, and they say it's a minimum of 11 weeks, so it's a little bit touch and go. But the thing that the passport took time, and they said it was going to take time. The one that caused us the issues was that if you send away your passport, obviously you get a new passport back, but you don't get your old passport back, do you? Immediately.
Oh, no. So the visa's in the old passport.
So
Oh,
so
dear.
That takes a little bit more time.
Yes.
As well. So, yeah, there are ways and means, and I know it's a difficult one for you because obviously there's a number of different nationalities around the world and each facing their own issues.
Exactly. And as you heard from KJ, she's got one situation. But as you raised, there was somebody else who got in touch with us absolutely saying what you just said, that she lost track, that her son's passport had expired. And they've already gone ahead and made plans for the summer, but now those look like they're actually being on hold because of the waiting time to get his passport renewed. So technically, she was saying that it looks like they're going to be stuck here. Not that that's a bad thing, but just as in not able to go anywhere purely because they haven't been able to renew his passport.
There are, I can highly recommend the fast track system in the UK.
This is the thing.
If you've got the ability to get back, and again, this is just the UK, but if you've got the ability to fly back and do the fast track one, it is brilliant. And it's very rare that I talk about British governmental services being brilliant, but that one is second to none.
And it's definitely fast track?
Oh, yes.
Okay, right.
Can I jump in here, Tom? Because I haven't seen you for 3 weeks because you were away and then I was away. But I remember you basically had to travel on an expired passport, didn't you?
Yeah,
And you were a little nervous about that, but it clearly went okay.
We sort of got the permission to travel, as it were, and got back there. But it was just one of those ones where, you know, when you get an email from a government institution in the UK saying, be at said office in Victoria at 10:30 in the morning, do not come any more than 10 minutes earlier than that because you won't be allowed in. Do not come more than 10 minutes later than that because you won't be allowed in. It has to be 10:30 at the dot. You went, this is doomed for disaster. I'm going to be there all day and I'm going to have forgotten to bring something with me or whatever. In and out in about 90 seconds. Mm.
And then how long to get your passport?
Then. They gave it to me then.
There and then?
Yeah. I thought I was going in there for a grilling from the authorities. No. Here's your new passport. Thank you very much indeed.
But the thing is, I think many countries, they may have certain options like that, but it all comes down to the...
If you can travel,
exactly.
Yeah.
If it's as fast or not. But yeah.
No, I appreciate not everyone can travel, so get it. Serena is putting together a file on this one. Much like her COVID files. Reams, if people want to find out
more. Just check out Aaron New Centre app or all our socials.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Now we do have the head of the WTO warning that a food crisis could be upon us. Meanwhile, here in the UAE, Ramadan is here, but supply chain woes globally also remain. What does all of that mean for our supermarkets? We are very pleased to be joined in the studio in person by a man who has dressed for the occasion, if you don't look at the socks, Tom Harvey, Commercial General Manager at Spennies. Tom, good morning. It's nice to see you. What does Ramadan generally mean for spending patterns here in Dubai?
Well, for the last couple of years, it's been a little bit strange because obviously with changes that we've had in the last 2 years to opening of restaurants, the restrictions on the size of gatherings, it has been a little bit different. This year, we can definitely see things are thankfully getting back to normal. So that means it will mean a few more people going out to have their iftars in the hotels. You've seen the marquees going up everywhere. But also it means for us, which is good news, many more larger family gatherings at home. And that means people having bigger celebrations, buying more food.
Okay, so what is normal for Ramadan? Give me an idea of the kind of food spikes we see, particularly of the favourites like Vimto.
So Vimto is obviously massive, and we all see going around all of the different retailers that there are a lot of big deals that happen at this time of the year. What we tend to see is always huge increases in some of the staples, you know, very big bags of rice, people buying enormous quantities of chicken, of fresh fruit and vegetables all at the same time. What we've also seen this year is because people are going back to work, we've got a little bit of time poverty again. People are more time poor because they're not working from home as much. So for Spinneys, it's fantastic because it actually means the fresh and the convenience products that we offer, where there's a greater deal of preparation in the products, is seeing much higher demand. So some of the ready marinated joints of lamb we've got, like the pomegranate molasses shoulder, and some of the fresh soups, which are perfect for breaking the fast, that we've just brought into the stores in the last 2 weeks, we're starting to see really, really strong demand for. those convenient, fresh products that make life easier for customers to spend more time relaxing with their family and a little bit less time cooking.
I know one thing Tom's been querying over Ramadan. Is Quality Street considered to be a Ramadan product?
We certainly sell a lot of Quality Street, but one of the things that we're always very proud of at Spin is the range of products that you can't get anywhere else. So there's a lot of different sweet treats that that we see going moving off the shelves. One of our favourites, actually, and is seeing really big demand, is our local. It's one of our business incubators that we started 2 years ago, Merzam, who do an amazing range of artisan chocolates and chocolate dates. Exclusively for Spinnies here.
Okay, so let's look at the ability to get them in. We've been talking supply chain woes for over a year now. What does the current situation mean for your ability to get this stuff on the shelves and in the storerooms?
Well, it's still challenging. It's been challenging for 2 years to get things in. And actually, even before COVID, because of the amount of food that we import, we are heavily much more reliant on third-party factors such as the shipping. We're actually seeing that shipping is getting better. Not returning to where we were even a year ago. The reliability of sea freight is well known to be at a historical low. But there are signs that things are improving. We're still being very cautious. We think with some of the challenges we've got with COVID rises in particularly lockdowns in Shanghai and across China, that there is the potential for some further disruption. So we carry on making sure that we're protecting everything we can by making sure we invest in things like air freighting products that we would normally bring by sea freight to make sure that everything that the customers want is on the shelves to the very best of our ability.
What's the balancing act for you then? If on one hand we're using air freight, which is generally more expensive than sea cargo, and we're seeing a lot of prices of commodities spike, but we've also got the authorities here making sure there's no price gouging during Ramadan, so they have got rules about not being able to put the prices up of a large list of staples. How does a retailer balance those two things?
We balance them every day. That is our day job. That is what me and my team are paid to do. So some of it is about being sensible about the sorts of products where we can simply find an alternative source. So things like rice, if we've got sea freight, it is a commodity item. There's other places. There are local wholesalers and traders where we're actually able to bring in products to keep us tided over. And we make very strategic and tactical decisions on what are the most important products that our customers want to see coming onto the shelves. In relation to the pricing of those, there are a set of rules that come out from the government. We are fully respectful of all of those. And actually, again, look at what we can do to manage prices in a different way. So we've spent an enormous amount of time developing a far more comprehensive range of Spinnies food private label products. And we're actually seeing that in spite of all of the challenges we've got on freight, the challenges we've got on inflation, we're now, and people not used to hearing me say this or hearing somebody from Spinnies talk about this, we've actually got the cheapest priced pure fresh cow's milk available in the UAE through the new Spinnies food range of milk.
Which is interesting because milk is one of the commodities people are warning of price spikes. 30 seconds left with you. Does it mean thinner margins for you guys this Ramadan?
Ramadan's always a time where we look to invest in particular products to make sure that we've got the products at the prices that customers want. The margins overall, it doesn't make a significant difference. As I was saying at the top of the interview, with the move into convenience products, which generally do operate at higher margins, we're actually able to balance that through the mix of products and protect what we do for our business and also make sure we've got the best products for our customers.
Tom Harvey is Commercial General Manager at Spinnies, speaking to us this morning about the Ramadan Balancing Act, making sure that you've got everything on the shelves, including enough info for everybody.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Talking banking now, in particular, small and medium-sized enterprise business banking, and that is because joining us on the line from Abu Dhabi is the Chief Executive of Emirates Development Bank, Ahmed Mohammed Al-Nakbi. Mr. Al-Nakbi, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Busy day for you yesterday, announcing what's described as record performance over the past 12 months and a near 2 billion dirham contribution to the UAE's economy. In simple terms, what happened last year at the bank?
So we launched the strategy for Emirates Development Bank, the refresh strategy, back in May of 2021. And since then, we've been working on a couple of our key pillars, such as supporting the UAE's industrial development. We focus on the acceleration of the adoption of advanced technology and empowering the growth of SMEs in the country. We're focused on five key sectors, which are manufacturing, advanced technology, infrastructure, healthcare, and food security. And since that time, since we've launched that strategy, we've been able to offer direct and indirect financing and support to over 1,300 SMEs and mobilize over $332 million in capital to SMEs through our credit guarantee program in partnership with nine banks. We've also launched our corporate banking division within the institution in order to serve also large corporations. And we've launched a digital banking application, which is focused for startups and small businesses to allow them to open up accounts. And in under 6 months, we've had over 1,000 companies take advantage of that offer.
So let's get a bit of context to this. Emirates Development Bank has been around for more than a decade now. It was set up by federal decree in 2011. But as you alluded to there, the past 12 months have seen a big change in strategy. You've come in as chief executive. Just remind us how big a shift that was over the past 12 months in terms of Emirates Development Bank in simple terms.
So the bank was a merger between the real estate bank and the industrial bank of the country back in 2011. The focus was very much on the real estate side for the last 7-8 years. But there, obviously, with the shift with our economy and what we're looking to developing in non-oil GDP, we've relaunched the strategy of the bank to be very much focused on the development side of things. This past year has been a record year. We've given out over $1.5 billion in loans to our priority sectors, and at the same time contributed, as you had mentioned earlier, about $1.9 billion back to the GDP of the country in those key sectors.
In terms of getting their hands on this money, because a lot of Business Breakfast listeners will be listening in, and they do write to us saying it's really hard as an SME owner to get access to financing. How do they tap into some of these funds? Because I know you're not a bank in the sense that FAB is a bank or Rack Bank is a bank. You kind of work with those institutions, don't you? So how do people get their hands on this money?
So just to be clear, we definitely are a bank in the terms of we do credit underwriting. However, we're very much focused and driven by development impact. So we have a development scorecard, which we then use to evaluate every transaction that we look to finance to see what is the economic impact of that specific transaction. And based on that, we give preferable terms and are able to support SMEs and large corporates in those five key sectors. The best way to go about applying for the financing, again, if you're within one of those five key sectors, manufacturing, advanced technology, infrastructure, healthcare, and food security, is to visit our website, edb.gov.ae. You can also contact our contact center, and our phone number is listed on the website as well. And we will pair you with one of our relationship managers who will be able to discuss your specific needs for financing.
Sanjay has written in with a question. Is this money just available to Emiratis and Emirati-owned companies, or can expats and expat-owned companies also tap into it?
No, absolutely. It's open to expat and Emirati-owned companies. That's a great question. People always ask us that. Emirates Development Bank is here to support any company that is looking to set up their business here in the UAE or expand their business here in the UAE or relocate their business to the UAE. So expat or UAE national-owned, happy to support either.
Graham writes in, that's great to hear. What kind of interest rates will we be paying? Because Graham says quite often SMEs pay punitive interest rates in the high teens here in the UAE.
So definitely not in the high teens. It will be in the single digits. Now, again, it is dependent case by case on the risk profiling of that specific company. But we are much better priced as a development bank than any commercial bank. Again, not as in we are looking to compete with them, but because we are looking to deploy financing to projects that are developmental in nature here in the country, in the UAE.
So $1.5 billion in loans last year to about 1,300 companies, which is great. But your plans are much, much bigger than that. By 2025, you want to be $33 billion at dirhams. So that is a significant growth trajectory that you've got. Where are you going to source enough good companies to deploy that much money?
So we have over 26 partnerships right now, both on the government federal level, the local government level, free zones, chambers of commerce, departments of economic development. We are going out as Emirates Development Bank to all the key partners and key areas in the country, the economic zones, where we can find companies that are already in the process of setting up, making sure they know about our products and services, and then getting them hopefully to take on some of the support that we can give them. So it's something which is already in the process. We believe that between now and 2025, there'll be plenty of companies looking for this kind of support.
And finally, give me an example of one of those 1,300 or so companies that you've lent money to over the past year or so. A very quick case study to demonstrate the kind of business that you're looking at.
Sure. I can't give any names because, again, due to client confidentiality, so I won't list any names. However, we are in those five key sectors, as I mentioned: manufacturing, advanced technology, infrastructure, healthcare, and food security. There are certain companies which you'll see coming out soon in an ad campaign who we've worked with, for example, on the PCR kits. The test kits that, you know, we've all experienced this over the past couple of years, but those swabs that go up your nose, that's a company that's locally manufacturing here in the UAE. Same goes for some companies in manufacturing production who do tiles, who do carpets. You have all kinds of manufacturers who are located here within the healthcare sector, within the manufacturing sector, within the advanced technology sector.
Great talk. Do you appreciate your time this morning? That's the voice of Ahmed Mohamed Al-Naqbi, Chief Executive of Emirates Development Bank, announcing a record year, almost $2 billion worth of impact on the UAE economy.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Supply chain woes. What supply chain woes when it comes to high-end property here? And also, allegedly premium office space. So anecdotal evidence for you. If you go down to the Woods today, or not so much the Woods, but certainly DIFC, just have a little look around there. You will notice that it is as busy as it has been in a long, long time. In fact, anecdotally again, somebody said, you know what you want to do is you want to go down to the lobby at ICD Brookfield Place and you want to sit in the lobby there, and then you'll get a proper idea of just how much demand there is out there. The place is buzzing. I said, hang on, I know a bloke down at the ICD Brookfield Place. He invited us down to broadcast the show from there once. So let's get him in studio, return the favour. Ben McGregor is the investment director for ICD Brookfield Place and Brookfield Properties. Obviously, some of the most go-to premium office real estate here in the region. Ben McGregor joins us live in studio. Ben, lovely to see you.
Great to see you, Tom.
I suppose I have to throw that to you, because albeit anecdotal, that one, talking to mates over the weekend, what's the state of affairs at ICD Brookfield Place? Where are you at in terms of tenants, owners and otherwise?
Look, it's buzzing down at ICD Brookfield Place. We've got 80% of the building has been committed now. We launched the building. It's 1.1 million square feet of leasable area. In the middle of the pandemic, so challenging times, but we've seen a huge flight to quality and the building is filling up rapidly.
And is that the same in that whole area down at DIFC at the moment?
It is very busy.
Is it?
It's vibrant. People are looking to get back into life. Speaking to some of the operators, not just the fine dining, which is very hard to get a table, but some of the more casual offerings, which are more breakfast, lunch, they've had their busiest quarter on record.
Yeah,
so people are back.
I must reach out to AJ, because I hear that trying to get a lunch table at the Arts Club is pretty tough these days at the moment. To that end, and given the I don't understand it, though, because at the same place, we were told, or we were led to believe, Ben, that one of the learnings from the pandemic is that no one wanted to go back to an office again, and offices were dead, and therefore everyone was going to be working from home. That's not the case.
No, absolutely not. I think quite the opposite. I think we're seeing a renaissance in vibrant physical workspaces. Companies are coming back. In terms of the war for talent, it's real. People are saying it's a great resignation. I think people are disengaged with the work from home and the monotony that comes with. People want to be around people, want superior communication. And then vibrant physical workspaces, which outdate some of the existing product that exists here in Dubai. Things like sustainability, culture. Last year we hosted 103 events, from art to music to black tie galas. So people are looking for that environment which gives their workers a better place to work, and then fitness, health, food, excuse me. These are really important aspects of people's daily lives, and you just can't replicate that in your home.
Give us an insight, given the data that you've got access to. Who's renting? Who's buying? Who's taking this office space at the moment?
Look, we're very fortunate. We've had the privilege of being able to select our tenants, and we've got blue chip companies, the best of every sector, and it's very diverse. It's not just what one would have thought was a banking, finance, legal jurisdiction. It's incredibly diverse in that we've got technology, we've got management consultants, we've got private offices, we've got luxury goods, Cartier, Montblanc, Dunhill, Van Cleef, many luxury brands are moving in. We've got essentially technology groups are starting to line up as well. So it's a very diverse mix, and I think that's one of our biggest attractors. We've got such a vibrant mixed community, and we're really focused on building that community.
Supply and demand curve there, Ben. Does that mean that the rents are going up?
Brandy, we've always been a little higher than the sort of prime rates. The quality of the asset is justifying that, but people are saying that there's great value in the real estate, and it's not just the dirham per square foot. People are taking much more due diligence now in terms of the physical asset. A lot of assets out there, it's termed sick buildings, poor air quality, bad lifting, no natural light, no amenities. These are fundamental requirements. So the rents are creeping up, yes, across the market, DRC, and even onshore we've seen a big uplift in rents. So I think that's a trend, and there's not a lot of new supply coming online.
But is this newbies, or is this just existing Dubai tenants who've gone, you know what, I've realised that I need premium space now to move forward? Is there a sort of mix there of those that have been established here for a while, or is this new tenants coming to Dubai?
The great bit in this story of ICD Brookfield Place is that these are global relationships of Brookfield, and also a lot of inward bound new companies. 65% of our tenants are new to DIFC. Wow. So it's an incredible figure. We're seeing a big upswing from Europe, big upswing particularly from Hong Kong. So Dubai is on the up, no doubt about it.
You mentioned talent a little bit earlier on, the great resignation, etc., and therefore demands of good talent and retention of talent is key as well. Just wondering whether premium office space and a healthy working environment that you mentioned there, or attractive working environment, is part and parcel of that retention of talent.
Absolutely. I mean, great culture is key to a corporation's success and its longevity and productivity. A vibrant physical workspace and we'll foster that culture if it's done in the right way. We really are focused on that community aspect. We have a whole team that operates that side of the business, and they bring the space to life. So attracting and retaining talent for our best corporates is a lot easier if you're in an asset like ours versus perhaps something that has none of those aspects.
So just going back to Brandy's point and yours as well about supply and demand, and again, what we've just heard from Mashrek there. I mean, with supply drying up at the moment, with your Brookfield hat on as well, are you looking at other opportunities?
Yeah, of course we are. We're big believers in this region, and we've got investments across many different sectors, not just real estate, you know, technology, payment portals, pipelines. So the Mirex portfolio is something that we're seeing a lot of improvement and in the repositioning and reimagining of those assets. So we're believers, and we'll continue to drive forward and do special things in the region.
Just a quick one as well, because you mentioned there about new tenants and a lot of interest coming in from Europe. Now, traditionally, there's been a lot of interest from Asia as well. We know that there's been sort of closure of borders for a lot of Chinese companies, etc., and a lot of Asian countries as well. So again, is there the potential that there might be more interest moving forward as things relax a little bit more?
100%. I'm speaking to a lot of friends and business associates that are based in Hong Kong, and unfortunately for Hong Kong, I think they're really focused on a new HQ or diversifying away from there. So we're seeing a huge upswing of businesses moving to the region.
It's good times, Ben.
Very good.
Good times indeed.
good times, Tom. So let's ride the wave.
We will see you down there very, very shortly. Ben, good to have you in. Nice to have you in the studio to return the favour a little bit, as obviously our studio is not quite as luxurious as your lobby down there at IC Liberfield Place. But bless you, mate. Thanks so much indeed for coming on in.
Thanks, Tom.
Big thanks to Ben McGregor. He's the Investment Director at ICD Brookfield and Brookfield Properties. And as you heard, there is plenty of demand.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.